This is the Complete Stories Podcast. In this episode, Into the Grove by Jeremy Rimbert.
The following stories are works of fiction. Unless otherwise indicated, all the names, characters, businesses, places, events, and incidents in this episode are either the product of the author's imagination or used in a fictitious manner. Any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, or actual events is purely coincidental. All rights reserved. No portion of this podcast may be reproduced in any form without permission from the authors with whom the copyright remains. For permissions, contact thecompletestories@gmail.com or visit thecompletestories.com.
In this birch grove, far removed from trouble and pain, where the pink, unwavering light of morning pulsates in the heavens. Quote Nikolai Zabolotsky. They were in Pinky's Pink Palace after school, rear bumpers pressed into the vinyl of the centermost booth. Josie was wearing red petal pushers and her cheer sweater. Josie was not a dumb girl, regardless of the activities she was in. Cheer, fashion, poetry. She was actually a smart girl. She'd been raised by a businessman dad. He owned a stapler company and a ranch which her mother attended to. As such, they'd raised her to be a game player.
You have to play the game, Josie.
Her dad would always say over the morning paper. President of the local fraternal order, he was always commanding. A woman must always smile and look her best. Her mom would say, that and, don't ever pass gas in front of others. Excuse yourself and leave the room. She was also in the Young Republicans, where she met her current boyfriend, Scoot. Scoot was a winner. He was all her parents wanted from her in male form. Her friends, Meg, currently sitting beside her on a high pony, and Anne, across from her wearing her pony low, even joked that Scoot and Josie looked more like siblings than a couple. He'd be along any moment with the rest of the pigskin army. And he'd buy her a Coke, and he'd put his arm around her, and he'd drive her home with a quick stop to steal kisses and grope her by the aqueduct. But what no one knew, not her parents, nor Meg and Anne, and especially not dumb as a bag of nails Mr. Quarterback Scoot, was that there was something changing in her. She could feel it, like a second puberty, but more powerful. Last weekend, she was babysitting for the Jewish family, the Solomons, and their little brat Ash was going all cuckoo, slurping on a lolly and bouncing on the furniture. Josie felt a headache coming on, blinding. She went somewhere up above. Not heaven. Like, up to the ceiling. She could see herself snatch the lolly from the kid roughly so he fell on his butt. Then, while he was wailing and the family dog barking, she stared right at him, eating the lolly. Like, crunching the hard thing and chewing it so the shards cut up the roof of her mouth. It was the best. Like, the pain. Ash, crying. So delicious. Then there was Carson. Carson was the grinchiest. He went to school on the other side of town, with the other coloreds. Josie first met him when she was shopping with her mom at Raleigh's department store. She felt sick suddenly and needed air. She slipped out a side door, and there he was, standing there. Strong arms glistening in the sun, with one hand shoved into his pocket, looking up at the sky. She ran right past him and threw up on the street. When she looked up from the hair draped over her forehead, over her eyes, he was staring at her. Puzzlement etched into his brow. She realized he'd been drinking out there. He had a little pint bottle of some strong medicine in his hand. Josie walked over and took it from his hand, feeling the electrical softness of his skin, and took a big swig. He looked on with that puzzle getting even deeper, and when a garbage truck driver, a dirty villain of a white hick, shouted out the window,
"What you doing with that girl, boy?"
Carson took his liquor back and said,
"Shut up."
He was the living end. She'd never seen a colored talk to anyone like that. The driver drove off with two smiling coloreds hanging off the back like gargoyles. "What's your name?"
"Awesome."
Just then, the door popped open. Her mom had sent the store's concierge to find her. She slipped back into the door, and she no longer felt sick. She had never felt better in her life. And she saw him all the time now. Every time she closed her eyes, even if just blinking for too long on the sofa watching the evening news with Dad, she could see Carson's face. Not frowning at her, but smiling, eyes twinkling for her. In geography class, she traveled the world with him. In home economics, she brought him Yankee pot roast, which he tossed off the table to throw her on and eat her up. Last Tuesday, Josie went shopping at the Raleigh's again and slipped out that door to see if he was there. But he wasn't. She came home feeling sick again and found a permanent marker in her dad's workbench. She went to her room and took her clothes off. Standing there in her polka dot undies and bra, she drew a mark on the flesh of her belly and kept drawing until soon his whole name was there. When she was necking with Scoot in his father's cherry red Chevy, he put his hand up her shirt and almost exposed it. She had to bite his ear and play the prude to get him to stop.
"Damn it, Josie,"
he said, drawling like a hick.
"I think you drew blood."
"Take me home," she said, fixing her clothes like a real good girl. She heard a loud chanting and rustling horseplay of the army of pigskin carriers now outside the diner. She saw them stop and whisper and giggle like church ladies outside the window. Then they were inside, making a ruckus, and Scoot's heavy arm was around her. The smell of his sweat and Tuscan leather was enough to make her toss her cookies. He ordered her a Coke and himself a double palace burger with chili cheese fries and a pink swirl sundae. He didn't even ask if she wanted anything to eat, just assuming she'd be satisfied picking fries off his plate like a hobo. The noise was getting to be too much. Josie felt a headache coming on behind her eyes. Just when she thought she would scream, he walked in. Carson walked right in. She thought it was a dream at first, but then the whole place got quiet. She watched his barrel-like brown arms as he hoisted a crate of pop bottles.
"Hey, you're supposed to come around back."
Pinky Morgan came out of the kitchen, yelling like a madman.
"Kid, no one answered. You want your pop or not?"
he said, thrusting the crate into Pinky's chest. Pinky looked so outdone. Josie laughed out loud. Her entire table turned and stared at her. "Oh, come on," she said, putting the striped straw between her lips and sucking the sweet cherry Coke into her mouth. It lit up her tongue like a kiss on Independence Day.
"You believe that?"
Scoot was saying to John Fridley.
"A nigger walking right up in here with all these white kids around. Crazy,"
John Fridley was saying, trying to match Scoot's sense of offense. But Josie knew it was at least part act. She'd found out after Meg had failed to tame John Fridley, and doing her own assessment in the rec room of her house, that John Fridley was as queer as a $3 bill. Josie began unhinging herself from beneath Scoot's arm and sliding out the side of the booth. Scoot grabbed her hand, goggling at her in his sleepy-eyed, dumb way.
"Where you think you going?"
"Girl business, Scoot. Let me have a few secrets."
"Oh, I'll come with you,"
Anne said in her overly excited, energetic, bug-eyed way. Josie nodded her head and did a subtle belly pat, and Anne sat down, thinking Josie was actually going to defecate in the Pink Palace with gossips like Susie Roman walking around, waiting for a girl to fall from grace. She walked toward the bathroom. Then she walked right past it to the back door, where she could see, through the little window, the back of Carson's delivery truck. She felt her heart flaming up like a charcoal grill, and that fire was tickling her in all the places Scoot never did. She pushed the door, scared her legs might not carry her. Then she was in the alley with the truck. She stood there, trying to make her breath steady because it was coming out in little pants. She saw the door open and Carson came out, and didn't even freeze when he saw her. Just walked right past her to the back of the truck with little more than a glance at Josie, and he threw his crates inside.
"Can I get a ride, boy?"
What a bird brain! She thought she would die. Why had she called him that? He wasn't a boy. He was all man.
"You call me boy again, I'll kill you,"
he said, walking to the driver's seat. She couldn't believe he'd actually spoken to her. And the way he spoke to her. None of the mock, sing-songy subservience of all the coloreds she'd ever met, or the modern chivalry exhibited by half the boys at her school when Scoot wasn't around and they were trying to get a slice of peach pie on the sly. She didn't know what to do at first, but when the truck didn't start, she ran up and pulled the door open, sliding into the seat beside him.
"Get down,"
he said, grabbing the back of her head with his strong hand and pushing her face into his lap so the skin of her cheek was pressed up against the rough denim. That fire was an inferno.
"You can sit up now,"
he finally said. They were on the outskirts of the colored section now. For a second, she thought he was going to bring her into his neighborhood, but instead he turned onto the expressway. That Teen Angel song that was climbing the charts began playing on the radio, and she just couldn't keep her eyes off him. Then, she couldn't keep her hands off. She was climbing into the driver's seat, onto his lap, kissing him all over his face, his dark skin so smooth in places and another spiky with invisible stubble. She sucked his heavy lips, pushed her tongue into his mouth for French kisses while he swerved, trying to stay on the road, avoiding cars with red, raging faces driving into the distance. He pulled the car off into Greeley's Grove, and they went on necking, and nothing had ever been more exhilarating to her ever than the strength of his lips on her neck and chest. She unbuttoned her blouse and offered up her peach-sized boobs for him to suckle love from. She maneuvered into the back seat, sucking in a hot breath, and began to pull off her pants, and he watched her. When his eyes saw the faded but still present remnants of his name on her stomach, he smiled a good smile, and she felt like a precious gift. Then she saw a sack-faced man looking in through the windshield, then another. She screamed, pulling up her pants, and Carson was yanked out the door. Josie pulled her blouse closed and pushed herself flat against the door, yelling in horror. Two of the sack-faced men were beating Carson as he shouted at them, bloody screaming obscenities, and trying his best to stand up. Then one of them stabbed Carson in the stomach. Another sack face appeared at the door of the car. He stayed there and looked at Josie, eyes human yet vacant from the holes in the sack. Josie shot her foot out and the heel knocked his head back. He grabbed at the sack and the area where his nose would be was soon covered in blood. He was coming toward her again. She opened the door behind her and spilled onto the ground, her partially buried breasts and stomach falling into the soil and gravel. She got one leg up, and then something grasped the other leg so tight she fell back down. She spun around and saw it was a big, fat, overall-wearing, sack-faced man. He was pulling her toward him like she weighed nothing. She clung to a patch of grass, but it just came up roots, and all as he dragged her, screaming. She let it go and grasped with both hands again, squeezing tight at the gravel and pebbles. Just as he was holding a cleaver over her, she threw both handfuls of gravel at his exposed, glassy brown eyes. He grasped them, and her leg was free. Josie got up and then ran deeper into the grove. Her legs, short but powerful from running track, were powerfully pumping under her. She would have gone on forever and never looked back had she not lost her footing and stumbled, slamming her shoulder into the roof of a birch tree. She pulled sweaty strands of hair from her face and looked back. The fat one was coming toward the grove. She didn't know if she should run again or stay here in the dark. She could tell by the way he moved his head side to side. He didn't know where she was. He was getting closer, though. About a yard from the birch tree she was hiding under, when the man she'd kicked, with the bloody mask, reached out and touched the fat guy's shoulder. She couldn't hear if words were exchanged. The fat one scanned for Josie for another few seconds, and turned around. Then, she saw why the fat guy had been called back. Carson. Beautiful, bloody Carson. They had a rope around his neck. He was screaming all sorts of dirty words at them while I threw the rope over the tree and began hoisting him up. Josie had to stop herself from screaming. She breathed in and closed her eyes, put her hands around her own throat and squeezed so tight. She opened her eyes as an ethereal light seemed to shine around Carson, jerking so violently branches fell from the tree. She let go of her throat and drew in a quick, painful breath that made her double over. She crawled through the grove until she could walk. She walked until she ran. She ran until she was on her street. The kids out playing beneath the streetlight looked at her, and she knew she was a mess. She felt like they all knew what had happened to her. She climbed the rungs nailed to the oak tree outside her window and slipped in. And didn't come out when her mother called her for dinner. She may have mumbled something about a stomach ache. The next morning when she got dressed, she did so on auto. She didn't have a feeling in her for updos or Mary Janes.
Morning, dear,
her mother said, looking up from a frying pan of flapjacks.
Oh, Josie, honey, you're white as a ghost,
her mother said, taking the pan from the fire and hurrying toward her. Josie tried to hold the tears in. She couldn't tell her mother what had happened without admitting what she'd been doing. Still, she couldn't hold the sobs. They were too powerful. She fell into her mother's arms, enveloped in her warmth. She felt safer than she had in a long time.
How can you just sit there reading the paper?
Her mother asked her father in an all-business tone. Josie wiped the tears from her eyes as her father lowered the newspaper. His face was foreign to her. It would never be the same. There was a small white bandage on the bridge of his nose, which was swollen, purple, grotesque. His voice hoarse, those eyes she had never noticed were so vacant yet achingly human.
It's okay, Josie,
he said, and toggled his lip corners into a smile.